When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Hey, it's me, Jersey. And it's time for your Thunder Punch Daily, the show that smacks you in the brain pan with 10 minutes of thoughts from me, I guess. So let's get started, shall we? Today we're going to talk about inspiration. This is one of those perennial questions I get. Well, how do you find inspiration? How do you find an idea for a story? How do you get going at the page? I have vivid recollections of being a young cartoonist just starting out and thinking of a cool idea for a character, cool idea for a premise, and not really knowing where to go from there, or even getting several issues into a series and finding myself painted into a corner with not knowing where the heck I wanted to go and what do all these pages that I've been doing, what do they amount to? What's the guiding idea? I didn't have it. And then the next thing I knew, I put the story down and I didn't touch it for many years. I've had stories that I've put to bed, or rather put in a drawer, and I still haven't gotten back to them for those very reasons. And I think this is a topic that's worth coming at again and again and again. I personally get a little suspicious of the person who rolls their eyes at this question and says, oh, really? You're going to ask this? Reason why is because there's always a new generation of cartoonists coming in who are going to be wondering this very question. I know I was there, like I said. But also, I think it's worth investigating from every individual artist's standpoint, because I think we all got a different way of coming at this thing. We all have our own inroads to what makes it click for us. And a lot of the inroads are going to be very similar. But, you know, the way we found it, the examples, the strategies that we employ are going to have subtle differences to them, and that may be a clue for beginning cartoonists as well as those of us who are well along our way. I mean, I think that we should always have our eye open for new strategies and new ways of thinking about our craft. So let's back up and talk about the art mullet just for a moment, because I think this bears repeating and restating, is that I personally subscribe to the notion that the creativity in the back of the brain cannot really operate effectively without a lot of input from the front of the brain. And that front of the brain, what is it good for? The frontal cortex is good for analysis. It's good for data crunching. I really do believe our minds are data crunching machines. I've told this story before about how, or rather not a story, but more of an analogy of you run into somebody you haven't seen in 5-6 years and they know your name, but for the life of you, you cannot remember their name. And then 3 days later, you're in line at the bank and bam, that was Ted. How come I'm remembering it now? I wasn't thinking about Ted now. I was in line at the bank. It's because our minds are always crunching on this stuff. Our minds are hungry to make order out of the world. That's why we see patterns in the clouds. That's why, yeah, when you look at like a weird configuration of the fibers in the carpet, you'll see different shapes. Our minds are geared to make order out of the world. And so I do think that inspiration is fueled by this analysis, meaning that it's more difficult to find inspiration if you don't fill that prefrontal cortex with a whole bunch of information, meaning read a lot. Don't just watch movies. Actually read some books. And read lots and lots of other people's comics. Look at lots of art. Go to a museum and look at the different art in there. And don't be looking for that inspiration. Just fill your mind. Just be curious about things. And when something grabs you, you have to instantly ask yourself why. And now here comes a story about how this kind of came to the forefront of my thinking several years ago. Back in the early 2000s, when I was first rewriting the front, to back up, the longtime art and starters know, the front was a series that I started when I was 19, did several issues of it, painted myself into a corner with the story, didn't know where to go with it. So I put it down as of like 1996, late 1996. Didn't work on it at all for several years. And then by the late 1990s, early 2000s, I was ready to do it again. I felt that my art had improved and my storytelling had improved somewhat. I wanted to reinvestigate these characters in this story. And at that time, I was really into the Tolkien's Middle-earth stories and that kind of story. Well, I was reading a lot of mythology, Greek mythology, Hindu mythology, and I wanted to do something that felt big and epic like that. And so I started constructing this story. And as you know, as those of you who have read the front, you know, it's a coming of age story about a young boy who finds out that he's very important. He has these special powers, and there's this ancient old guy who's going to try to capture him and do great harm to the world through him. And fortunately, there's all these wonderful little helpers, Rex Doyle, the old wizard character, and Opal, and Max, and Galen, these other strange people who don't fit into society, but they're really effective in a fight, and they're going to help protect this boy. It's your standard fairy tale, or rather, not fairy tale, but your standard fantasy motif, but told with superheroes. And for a long time when I was working on these notes, I was operating under this, it was going to be, anybody who's seen the Lord of the Rings movies, they're very good movies, and they're very true, for the most part, to the books, in tone and in essence. And that was the problem I was running into with the front, is I was approaching it from the standpoint of, I was taking it very seriously. And if I would have approached it, if I would have executed the book the way I was approaching it in, say, 1999, 2000, we would have had countless scenes of Thirsty opening his hand slowly with the ring in it, looking sad at the camera, like in the movies, the Lord of the Rings movies. So as I was getting well into my notes, something was feeling off. It was feeling like I was doing something good, and the characters were coming across nice and vibrant and true. But there was just something missing. I couldn't figure out what it was. And It occurred to me one day when I was just talking with my buddy Hoover on the phone. I talk with him every week, and we just talk about whatever is interesting to us. And we invariably come around and around to talking about the cartoons of our youth. We never run out of material there. I've known the guy for well over 10 years, and we've never gotten tired about talking about cartoons. And it occurred to me that a lot of our conversations revolved around how funny the villains are, how when we were kids, we loved Starscream and Thundercracker and Skywarp in the Transformers series, and some of our favorite episodes featured those three characters bickering, and even though they're very scary and dangerous when they're fighting, when they're not fighting, their bickering is fun to watch. And as I was struggling with the front, it occurred to me that that's what's missing. What's missing is that aspect of fun, that energy of the characters, the lighthearted moments where we learn to love the villains as much as the good guys. If you think about Lord of the Rings, the villains are not lovable by any means. They're terrifying. And that's good for that kind of story, but I didn't want to tell just a carbon copy ripoff of Lord of the Rings with superheroes. I wanted there to be, to have some kind of edge to it, some kind of special style or tone or something that is essentially me into the story. I think that most artists want that. Most creators want that. They want to create a story as only they can tell it. And here I was working on this very serious story, ignoring the fact that I love Saturday morning cartoons and the cartoons of my youth. And I'll never forget it. There was this lightning bolt moment where I wrote into my sketchbook, play the villains like cartoon supervillains. Don't take away anything scary about them, but just whenever they're not doing wicked things, we watch them do mundane things, and we watch them bicker and argue and explore their personalities in their off hours. And that was the genesis of all of the table gags at the beginnings of some of the middle chapters of the graphic novel, where the Brigadier General and the four mercenaries are sitting around the table joking around. Well, they're not joking around, but the mercenaries are being irreverent while the Brigadier General is trying to be the fist-shaking Shakespearean villain. So my point is that there I was writing this, what I thought was this serious graphic novel, you know, using the term graphic novel in the way like a lot of people use it, where this is something that you're supposed to take seriously and read twice. And I was overlooking something that I was taking for granted, the fact that I love cartoons without thinking about what it is about those cartoons that made me love them. And when I broke it down into that analysis of, well, in G.I. Joe, Transformers, Inhumanoids, a lot of the Sunbow shows, the villains are just as fun to experience as the heroes, and you can find yourself loving some villains more than you even love the good guys. And when that clicked in my brain, then I realized my approach for the front. It helped me create this whole tone of silliness and lightheartedness to balance out all the heavy mythology junk, all the Campbellian stuff that I put in there. And so that little story is meant to illustrate this idea of don't take for granted anything that you enjoy, anything that you have fun reading and watching or experiencing. The moment you find yourself doing that ah moment, that oh moment, in enjoying it, stop and ask yourself why. And this isn't to take away anything from the enjoyment. I really think that, and I've read essays from other writers who have said words to this effect, is that it's a simultaneity. You're enjoying it in that visceral thrill of the story itself, but you're also enjoying that, oh, wow, look what that writer did to make me gasp. So I don't think it takes anything away from it. I think it just becomes you're activating another part of the brain simultaneously with that other with the part of the brain that you've been using all these years. And so that's why I think that it's a good idea to just fill your mind with lots and lots of rich art and literature and look for those moments where something grabs you. Stop and ask yourself why and just make a note of it. Just jot it down in your sketchbook, just a little line, just a joke, just a character moment that jumps out at you. And you'll never know when that will come to inspire you for a way of approach to a story or a way to create a subtone to your story, a new way of looking at a certain kind of story, so that you're not doing the elevator pitch of, oh, this is Indiana Jones, but in space. I think that that kind of uninspired thinking is what happens in a lot of committee-driven intellectual properties. And what makes us say when we go to the movies, well, that wasn't all that good. I want my $10 back. It's when you have that inspiration of this is something I genuinely love deep in my heart and I can explain why. And then you can apply that to different parts of your story and mix it into new genres and create something that's all your own and that you actually enjoy working on and enjoy reading after the fact. And I'll bet you that your readers will love it for the same reasons. Okay, time to close this one out. Wait, who am I? I'm Jersey Drozd at jdrozd.com. You can follow me on Twitter at just Jersey, J-E-R-Z-Y. The theme song for this show was created by my brother Elliot Drozd. And again, I don't have a web link for him just yet. I'm working on that. Tara Platt did the voiceover. That's at T-A-R-A-P-L-A-T-T.com. She's awesome. And thank you, Tara, for doing the great voiceover. Don't forget to check out the other Art and Story Supreme shows like Mark of the Beast and Kevin Cross's High Adventure Daily. There's also four extra Art and Story Extremes on there every month, only available to you, the wonderful art and storyer who is providing material support for this project, as well as an extra Art and Story episode, Art and Story Supreme, you can check out every month, and videos, and don't forget the office hours. There's a lot of stuff to be had there, and a forum. Check out the forum at cbcomics.com/artandstory/forum, and you can discuss these episodes and all the other content that we're creating on the site. And last but not least, certainly not least, thank you very much for providing support to the Art and Story Supreme project. We really appreciate it. Okay, so be back again with another Thunder Punch Daily very soon. And until then, remember, everybody.
As we've just seen, Skeletor went back into the past to make evil things happen. In reality, no one can go back into the past. That's only make-believe. But we can try to learn from the past, from things that have happened to us, and try to apply them toward being better people today. Remember, it's today that counts. So make it the best day possible. Until next time, this is He-Man wishing you good health and good luck.